Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
This episode of The Honeydew is brought to you by Burrow. More on that later. Let me tell you about some dates real quick. February 22nd, Pasadena. I am at the Ice House. Josh Potter will be there with me as well as some other special guests. March 19th through the 21st, I'm in Phoenix, House of Comedy. Come on out, Phoenix. March 26th, I'm at the La Jolla Comedy Club. That's going to be a really fun show as well. April 3rd, I'm in Huntington Beach at the Rec Room, another great room, especially if you're down there in the South Bay. It's a great spot to check out. And April 23rd through the 25th, I'll be in Vancouver. So go to RyanSickler.com, sign up for the email, check out the dates on my calendar there.
You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here at Studio Jeans doing it at your mom's house. I'm Ryan Sickler. Ryan Sickler on all social media, RyanSickler.com. I want to tell you about some dates. Go over to my website, sign up for the newsletter. You'll find out about all this stuff. But February 22nd, I'm headlining the Ice House here in Pasadena. March 19th through the 21st, House of Comedy in Phoenix. March 26th, headlining the La Jolla Comedy Store. And April 23rd through the 25th, I'll be at the House of Comedy in Vancouver, my first time up in Vancouver. So come on out, see me live on the road. Everything will be available at RyanSickler.com. Website for The Honeydew here is thehoneydewpodcast.com. Get your merch, social media links. Make sure you're subscribed to the Your Mom's House YouTube page. And people ask all the time, what's the best way to help the podcast? How do I just engage with the sponsors? That's how you can help keep something that's not free to do free. That's how you do it. You engage with the sponsors. Thank you for all the messages. Thank you for reaching out. Thank you for sharing your struggles. You know, this show has been, it's been awesome. I really enjoy sitting here and laughing with people through their pain. And I always say, you know, we're highlighting the lowlights over here. And these are the stories behind the storytellers. And today's storyteller, first time here on The Honeydew, super excited to have him. Ladies and gentlemen, Yiannis Pappas.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you for being here,
yeah,
for real.
I'm excited to share my pain with you,
I was stoked. You got some good shit coming up here.
Oh, I got
here.
Some good stuff, and it's just good to do a podcast at like a bar high top like this, you know?
Listen.
Like I'm having a beer with a friend.
When I had this table made, and I wish I could remember his name, and I apologize now, but I think I said it at the beginning, but he was like, I want a table, and he's like, that you could have a glass of whiskey and tell stories. I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's what this fucking
that's
table
what it feels
is
like.
Right here.
I picked that up right
this
away.
This is handmade, reclaimed, everything right
Very
here.
Very nice.
Well, before we get into your stories, will you please plug, promote everything?
Yeah. Well, I got a special. Most importantly, I got a special called Blowing the Light on YouTube that Andrew Schultz was nice enough to produce and direct. So go check that out, called
great.
Blowing the Light. Yeah. I'm going to be at Gotham Comedy Club February 21st and 22nd in New York City. Then the weekend after that, I'll be at Uncle Vinny's in Point Pleasant, New Jersey, February 27th and 28th. And listen to my podcast with the Chris DiStefano History Hyenas.
Yeah, that's great.
And that's it.
So where are you originally from?
Brooklyn, New York. I'm a Brooklyn kid.
And is your family all from New York?
By the way, I just want to say it's nice. I got to get, like, I'm real good friends with Nate Bargatze.
Yeah.
But since he moved back to Tennessee and we lived in L.A. for a little while, we don't get up that much. it's nice for a New York kid to be around somebody from the South. It like lowers the blood pressure a little bit.
I like that you get everyone says I have a Southern accent. I'm from Maryland.
You're from Maryland?
It's technically the South.
Yeah,
but it's not the South.
You guys have a weird combination.
We
like
do.
Maryland.
It's
Maryland.
Trash.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. It's a trash draw.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. So you're like, that's more mid-Atlantic, right?
It's definitely mid-Atlantic. I was voice texting with DeStefano, and he said something about, because he's coming on. I was like, yeah, of course. But and I look back at it later, and it spelled it C-O-A-R-S-E, like course. And I was like, no. And I wrote back, I was like, listen, that's C-O-U-R-S-E. I know how to spell course. That's my fucking... my trash Baltimore accent that can't get picked up on there.
Well, you got a calm energy about you. It's nice. I can feel my blood pressure
coming down,
Ray.
Good.
Yeah. So maybe it's not the Maryland. Maybe it's more you.
It might be.
You
it
are the South. You just had the spirit of the South. Yeah.
Now, is your family from Greece? Like,
yeah.
So how many generations here are you?
I am the typical Greek story.
Two.
You know? My mother was born there.
Yeah,
she was there. Actually, my mother's old. They had me when they were very old. So my mother was actually there during World War II. She was there with Nazis under the Nazi occupation.
For real?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she was a little girl when she saw them paratrooping and the paratroopers
Holy
flying in the sky.
Shit.
She's actually seen like the real these guys.
Yeah.
Like for real.
Fuck.
Yeah. She didn't see them in a Mel Brooks play. She saw the real deal.
Yeah.
They're not funny and they don't sing and dance.
Holy.
They do
shit.
Other stuff.
So how old was she when she had you?
She was 48 when she had me. Which is like everyone does that now because everyone's like, I'm going to do my career first.
Yeah.
But she did that, you know, back then. And then my dad, his like typical Greek story, his father came over.
But both parents are Greek?
Both parents are Greek. Yeah, both parents are Greek. His dad had a diner. And then that's how we do it. We come in via diner.
Man, the
that's
best.
That's what it is.
So my family in Baltimore City it's not Greek anymore. It's pretty much everything now. Dominican, Puerto Rican, everybody's there now. But it used to be Greek town back in the day, Highland Town in Baltimore.
I know it. Yeah.
You know it?
I know.
Eastern Avenue, that stretch, and some of the best. The Double T Diner is, we used to go there because it was 24/7. That was the spot, but that was like a 25-minute drive from our high school, but that's where we'd go on a Friday or Saturday, 2 or 3 in the morning, like, best fucking diners. I'll never forget. This was humiliating. But on Easter, I took my grandmother and her sister, my great aunt. She's a nun, Sister Carmina. They're both passed. Rest in peace. I take them to the Double T Diner. I'm like, this is the fucking best Greek diner. It's the spot. My Sister Carmina loved the Greek salad so much. She put that shit in a napkin, rolled it up, and put it in her purse. I'm like, sister. She's like, they're not going to stop a nun. I said, that they will give you a container.
Yeah, they don't got to-go containers.
They're not going to stop you for stealing it. They're going to give you something nice to put it in, for God's sake.
Yeah, that's not very practical to carry it in a napkin. You know, it's not a sandwich. Yeah, Greek diners. How good is a Greek diner?
Come on, man.
The older you get, too, we're a couple kids in our 40s. I don't know if you've experienced the bliss and joy that is sitting alone in a diner having a piece of warm apple pie with a scoop of vanilla ice cream, but I mean, if I get to heaven, I'll be like, eh, because I think that is heaven. I used to see old people sitting in diners by themselves, and it used to depress me. I'd be like, this guy's lonely or whatever. Now I get it. Now I'm like, that guy's having the best night of his life.
That's how I came up with the name for the show. I'm sitting in a diner, and I didn't eat the fucking honeydew in the fruit cup because I never do, and then I see them scattered all across the tabletops. I'm like, oh, my God, it's fucking perfectly good fruit.
Is that true?
Yeah. And then I'm like, I'm a honeydew.
Yeah.
I'm a honeydew in life.
That's amazing.
And that was it, from sitting at a diner having dinner by myself.
So thank you to all the Greek immigrants that started diners, made them 24 hours so you could one day sit there,
right,
see the honeydew, and now here we are.
You saw the importance of that.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing. I hate, like, I don't know if you've ever been to Europe or whatever. It's like, I did a few shows in Europe at a certain, like, years ago. And, like, yeah, you get hungry at, like, 1, 2 in the morning. You get so used to the convenience of a diner. And then 1, 2 in the morning, all you got is, like, dirty shawarma stores with drunk people vomiting. You know, that's all they got is dirty shawarma. You're like, give me a nice Greek diner guy and sit down and get anything I want,
I want.
You want a piece of fish? We have it.
Yeah.
You want the steak? We have it. You have anything? They have everything in the Greek diner that you want to have. So
how do your parents meet? Here in the States?
They met. My dad was in the Korean War, and then he came back, and then everyone was, like, dead from World War II and Korea, which is, by the way, we forget about
that.
It's like, our parents yell at us, like, get a job. It's like, dude, it's hard. There's no jobs. It was like, just because when you grew up, everyone was dead. Yeah. And they were like recruiting people. Like,
there's competition now, goddamn.
Yeah, exactly. Like, everyone was dead, dude.
Everyone was dead.
I mean, World War II killed, like, all the dudes. So my dad basically got into law school because they were, like, going, like, we need people to, like, do law because everyone's gone.
Right, yeah.
So he came back from the Army. So he went to law school a little later. And my mother was just – my mother's just a smart immigrant girl. She went to law school, and they met at Brooklyn Law School.
Wow.
And that was back in the time when, like, if they were, like, you're Greek? And she was, like, we got to have kids.
Yeah.
So I don't even think they had a conversation. I think they just fucked and then made people and got married. Like, I don't even know if they ever talked. They just assumed, like, they found each other. They're both Greek. It's like they got to get married.
You guys do the big, like, Easter lamb and all that stuff?
Yeah, Greeks have their own Easter.
I fucking love that.
We do our own thing where we put the lamb up on a spit, scare the children, yeah. You know?
I grew up with some Greek kids in our high school, and everything was malaka.
Yeah.
Everything was malaka. Malaka.
It's a great curse.
It is a good
one. Do you know what it means?
It's jerk off, right? Like, you fucking jerk off.
Yeah. That's the closest translation is jerk off, but it, like, literally means, like, the champion masturbator.
It's like, all these years I had the 30 fucking years you just that's the literal.
That's like kind of the most close. Is like, this guy is the greatest masturbator. He's the champ, the Michael Jordan of it. All he does is sit around just jerk it.
Shit,
he's gotten really good at it. Yeah, malaka. It's like they say it like it's like ella malaka, tina super malaka. It's just like a constant curse that is like just part of the language that people just use colloquially when they're talking Greeks. They love to curse.
I often think about it like, I don't think I could go to another country and open a business. I don't think, I'm not that person that would do that. You know what I mean? And then learn your language and ingratiate myself not only into your community, but your neighborhoods and everything else. Like, I don't know that I would do that. So any time someone did that and they had like a sub shop. That's another thing I miss about the East Coast. It was a like subs and pizza, you know, subs. And it was in fucking West Baltimore in those wire neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And we would go down and deliver with them every once in a while. And I was like, I'm not going to be doing this anymore.
Yeah.
Man. It gets super fucking sketchy around here.
Yeah. Baltimore is just like that little area by the water. And then the rest is the wire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Greeks ran like the delivery food. It was always some Greek dude rolling through.
Yeah.
You guys hustle.
That's
I love it.
That's how, that was the thing they did. Like, they came in, they did the diners.
But not your parents. They went to law school, both of them.
Their grandparents, my grandparents did it, and then my parents went to law school. But, yeah, it's interesting to think about that generation of immigrants, too. When you, like, because imagine being, like you said, have that type of ambition and courage to be like, I'm going to leave. I don't speak the language. I don't know the culture. And I'm going to just
figure it
out. I
don't even drive on the same side.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even left New York. I should have been in L.A. 15 years ago. Maybe I would have had a career. I didn't even go to L.A., let alone fucking go from Greece to America with nothing?
Nothing.
I mean, that's a generation of, like, industrious, like, ambitious people. So that they're, you know, when you look at all these Asians and South Asians and then their kids become doctors, you're like, yeah, those are the kids of families that, like, somehow figured out how to open up a dry cleaners with like a toothpick in their pocket and like a nickel, you know? So of course their kids are going to become doctors, you know? They're like, that's the best their country has to offer, and we got them. That's the great thing about America, is like, we take all the best from everywhere, because they know here we got like fucking poke bowls and pizza
and panini.
Yeah, they see the movies and they're like, I want that. I want to go live in Hollywood or whatever. And we attract them. And then you go to those countries, all that's left is just the lazy fucking people. All the rest of the countries just kind of look like Minnesota. It's like where all the ugly people stay. You ever go to all those other places and you go like, there's no good looking people because everyone left and went to LA, New York, Miami.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's the rest of the countries. We took your best and brightest.
So what was it like, what was it like having older, was your dad older too, same age?
Yeah, my dad was
like having older parents. Were your parents the old parents when you were in school and stuff?
Yeah, they were. It was weird. It was weird because, you know, they were like sometimes 20, 30 years older than, because my oldest brother is 17 years older than me. So
So same parents?
Same parents.
So how many kids total?
Three kids.
So what are the ages?
So my
Or the age gap?
Yeah, 10 years and 17 years. I'm the youngest by 10 and 17.
Wow.
So I was like, yeah, there was a couple of miscarriages before me. You know, they tried and then like they didn't have me and then somehow I was born. You know, nowadays that's more commonplace, but yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, it was weird because all my friends' kids were younger and I was just, I think that's where I really developed a phobia of my parents dying. And my dad told me that he always said that I used to say when I was little that I was worried he was going to die because I just thought he was so old, even though looking back, he was like in his 50s, mm-hmm. which is like old, but like.
It's old when you're seven.
Yeah, when you're seven. So yeah. I'm like, this guy's going to die tomorrow. So I've just always been scared I'm not going to have a dad. And it's weird because I just lost him last year and he lived till 91.
Wow.
So
that's a good run.
That's a good run.
That's a damn good run.
And you know what's scary about it, man? Is like my dad smoked cigarettes like packs a day for like I think 70 years.
God.
70 years. And he lived till 91. So when people say like, you know, you got to eat healthy, it's fucking random, dude. Whoever's running this show just like plucks us when they want to pluck us.
I believe, yeah. Like, I think cancer exists in all of us and it manifests in a lot of us and some of us who do that. Drink Pepsi, smoke fucking 3 packs of cigarettes a day, drink hard liquor, and they're just like, I live to be 96.
Yeah, it's just not fair. It's just not, I mean, like, Dick Cheney's still alive somehow. This guy's like 150 years old. He's got a bionic heart and he just keeps fucking. Guys just pointing fingers and bombing countries, and then like some of the best people just die and they're healthy. Like, you know, they'll be. My dad's goddaughter was like her profession was fitness, and somehow she just died of cancer. It just ravaged her whole body. Oh, it's just so random, and you never know. It's crazy, dude.
So you grew up with that fear for both your parents?
I did because they were old, and you know when I would look at the other parents, they were so much older, and it was such an uncommon thing that I was just scared that I was going to lose my parents. And my brother's brain injured, so my brother who's 10 years older than me is brain injured.
What does that mean?
Yeah, we're going to talk about my family. You're going to realize why I stand up on a wood plank and ask strangers to love me. There's always a story. I couldn't come in here and be like, you know, things were good. I don't know. I just, you know, yeah. There was no, I never needed attention from strangers. Yeah, it's there's a lot.
Is brain injured different than a brain damage?
Yeah. Well, no, brain injured is brain damage.
Okay.
But yeah, so like he wasn't born with it, which makes it even more tragic. It was during the time where they used to use forceps to pull the baby out. And so the doctor
and they
kind
did
of,
that.
They squeezed a little bit and caused some damage. And so. So that was that, yeah. So he was brain injured. Yeah.
So that's from birth.
That's from birth. That happened at the birth. So he's very high functioning in some areas.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
And that's where the brain injury is different from sort of, you know, another category like Down syndrome or whatever. It's like he's very high functioning in some things. At some point he was speaking like 2 languages, but, you know, very low functioning wherever that damage is, you know. So.
And how close are you to your brothers?
My oldest brother I'm not very close to because he's 17 years older than me. And like we go through periods of getting along, not getting along. We're very different. My middle brother I'm very close to. And now that my mother has Alzheimer's, so she's had that for a while. So now my middle brother's kind of like my responsibility. And so I think this was the thing I was...
He's 10. He's in his 50s then?
He's in his 50s. Yeah. So, but he's in a great program in Jersey and stuff. He works and they supervise him. But I think that was my fear when I was little is because there's this big responsibility that I knew was waiting for me. And like if my parents go, I was like, I didn't want to be too young when that happened. You know, even though I got an older brother, we don't get along that great. There wasn't this... feeling of family cohesion. So now I'm here. My biggest fears have kind of been realized, and much like most fears, the fear is worse than when it happens.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you can't spend time worrying about anything.
Future tripping.
Yeah,
you're overthinking.
It's what it is.
Yes.
And
that's what my therapist called it, future tripping.
I like that.
I do. That's the first thing I said. I was like, yeah, I fucking like that. I do that.
Yeah.
And you future tripped for
40 years. I only started enjoying life like 10 minutes ago. It's such a shame how much of my life has been wasted on worrying about things that never fucking happen.
Yes. Anxiety, bullshit, worry, nothing.
It's just, and you know.
Meanwhile, your dad's chugging down cigarettes and everything else. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
And he's fine.
Yeah. Wow.
And I've had some of the worst shit happen to me, too. And even that shit, while it's happening, is not that bad, which is crazy to say. But like the fear or even the PTSD afterwards, which was the worst for me, so bad that I quit comedy for a couple of years. But
what happened?
I got shot in 2001.
You got shot?
Yeah.
What happened?
I was doing a show, told some bad jokes. Guy didn't know. That would be fun.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was like, what? Like,
you fucking suck.
Are we locked up out front?
No, it was I first started doing comedy like way back. My first, because I started like in 2000. And then I quit from 2002 to 2005. And then 2005 is when I like really started, 2005-6. But I quit because I was having these panic attacks, man, like this anxiety, this trauma that I didn't understand and was like emasculating. I would just be on the train in New York and I would...
And it come out of nowhere?
Come out of nowhere. So I didn't know what it was. But it's...
And you're how old?
I was 23. I was 23 at the time. I got shot when I was 23.
And your dad's still... Your mom is starting to show effects at that point?
Not yet. Her, the effects start in the 70s. The brutality of that is people who have a family member who are going through that know it. And it's brutal. It's like Chinese water torture. It's really brutal. And it's consuming and it's rough because it slowly starts to, but like, you know, just the things leaving on the stove, you know, it's just, there's danger everywhere. Just like, you know, charities will prey on people like that, which is brutal. And I saw that firsthand because she'll forget. My mother was forgetting she donated, and they would just keep calling, and she would donate again and again and again and again. And she cleaned out like $100,000 of her bank.
Nuh-uh. Yeah. That happened?
Yep.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you able to get it back?
No. You know, it's just like, that's what it is. She donated it, and, you know, they would call again the next. They start to get a hunch. I don't know if they do it maliciously, if they go, hey.
Well, if you keep calling, you're doing it maliciously. Kind of. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I had a great friend's mom who, unfortunately, both her parents, fortunately, they lived a long life, but unfortunately, at the same time, within a year, they both got Alzheimer's.
Wow.
And one day, her dad came upstairs with the shotgun, and she was like, what the fuck, and had to grab it and talk to the doctor. And the doctor was like, listen, they're at a point now where everything could be dangerous.
Right.
Get scissors, get all the shit out of the fucking house.
Right.
And she had to remove his guns and everything because he was hunted back in the day. You know? And he's just grabbing them, walking around the house. He doesn't even know where he is.
No.
You know?
The thing I learned that scares you cannot handle that as a family. You need professional help. And
yeah.
Hopefully the infrastructure for that happens. The healthcare cost for that goes down because it's on the rise for some reason. There's Alzheimer's everywhere.
It is.
And it's like, you cannot handle that as a family. You just can. It's not something you can do. It need, you know, like when my mother, we finally got my mother into place, which was hard because, you know, people are stubborn. You know, like, nothing's wrong with me. And, you know, the house is burning down. When you find it, you know, they lock them on a floor. They have a staff. Mm-hmm. Every night they have this, they sundown, they call it, so where they start freaking out when the sun, for some reason they don't really know. Yeah, nighttime it gets worse, and then the staff kind of redirects them and tells them, we'll let you go home tomorrow. And that's every day. It's like every day that you have to do that over. It's like the movie Memento. So you have to let professionals deal with that. And by the way, those people are like the real heroes to me. You know, I spent so much time, like in hospitals, and my dad was in hospice, and I'm like, We're fucking, you know, watching Tom Cruise jump around on a couch or whatever and talk about Scientology. It's like, this fucking guy, people like that are useless. They're useless to society. Like, we need to have like a full re-examination of who we worship, because those people are fucking useless. They used to be considered useless. Like, you know, back in the day, if you were a fucking actor, they'd be fucking some drunk, they'd pull off the street and be, read my genius lines, you fucking bum. You know, I'm the genius, I'm Shakespeare, I wrote the thing, you're a drunk on the street, it doesn't matter, put on a fucking wig, play the girl part, whatever. And so that's what I learned. Those people I have a high level of respect for. But yeah, it's just something you can't handle as a family. And so even getting shot and all that, I'd say the most brutal thing has been the Alzheimer's.
Yeah. Well, let's go back. What happened with the getting shot?
So I was working for my friend who was a nightclub promoter at the time, and I just started doing comedy, just like really new. And it was off to kind of a prodigious start. Like, I was doing my first college, I think it was Northeastern, the weekend before I did my first college. I was like 23, 24. And I used to work at the nightclub for him. He got me a job. I would do the cash register. And he used to make like cash, like thousands of dollars in cash. So it was an attempted robbery. And I just happened to be with him, and I got shot at point blank range.
What? Where?
In the like inner leg, like right by the dick. It was close. Yeah. If I had a bigger piece, I might be it might be gone.
Thank God.
The only time I was Thank glad God. I had a, like, you know, less than average piece. That's when that comes in handy.
I'll give you a good example when that comes in handy, goddammit. So what happened? How many guys? One guy?
It was one guy, and
he just pulls a gun out? What happened?
Like, we were walking up to the car, and
And so what, this is like 2-3 in the morning?
Yeah, after it was like 2-3 in the morning after the club.
And you have, he knows you have the cash on you?
Yeah, I guess he figured my friend had the cash, because I was with my friend. And it's wild, because usually I would go to my girlfriend's house, who lived in Manhattan at that time. But for some reason that night, I was like, hey, give me a ride home. Yeah. So went, I was getting in the passenger seat, and I just kind of looked over my shoulder as I was getting in, and I just saw him coming, masks, gloves. It happened so quick. And then I tried to get in and close the door, but he kind of, you know, sped up, and kind of before I could close the door, he was in, and I saw the gun. I kind of grabbed his arm, and then at some point he just fired, or as I pushed it down, he just fired one in my leg.
Did
loud.
You feel it right away?
No, or? You don't feel anything.
You didn't feel it's the adrenaline, burn or anything.
The burn.
Yeah.
It's hot afterwards.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's hot. But at the moment it happens, you feel nothing. Right. You smell the of the gunpowder.
So you heard it and knew the gun went off.
Dude, the sound in the car is like my ears were ringing. It's loud. Because you're in the car, so it's like it's reverberating off the walls. And the smell, I remember the smell. I remember the sound so loud. But you don't feel anything until it takes a couple seconds. Then you feel hot, the heat.
So what happens? You're still struggling after the first gun, or when it went off, he took off.
When he went off,
He's ready to kill. For
I don't know.
He
yeah,
clearly was.
Yeah, I guess clearly, or he was frustrated because I was grabbing him, and I don't know why I did that. You know, it's a fight or flight thing. You're not thinking.
Was he a big dude?
Not that big, thank God.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I'm just so lucky.
You are lucky.
I mean, I've been unlucky in the business, but then I go, you know what? I'm even Steven. Because.
Yeah, you are.
Because, I mean, we were in a Jeep too. So, and he shot me here in the inner right thigh.
Did it go through?
Oh, it lodged itself in my butt. That's it. There's another funny story coming.
Wait, hold it. Yeah, let's come back to that.
So, but to think if I was in a lower car than a Jeep.
That's your stomach,
then it's
your chest.
It's more of an organ area.
Yeah.
And also, there's also a main artery that runs there that it missed. So I just got lucky. I got really lucky.
And he didn't fire at your friend either?
No, my friend, when I was tussling, my friend got out and ran. What are you going to do? I don't blame him.
So he takes off, and now where's
he's screaming, and he's getting help. And then so I'm you know, wrestling with the arm. Maybe he fired because he was frustrated because I was holding him. But then I made a conscious decision to pretend like I was hurt, even though I didn't know if I was or not, which is kind of strange because you're just, everything's happening so fast, like a dream, you know? And I just kind of went limp. And then I think he kicked me a few times as I went down, and then he ran. Cops caught him, you know.
They did.
Caught him in some bushes. Yeah.
Bushes?
Yeah, he was hiding in some bushes. He threw the car into the gun under a car, and they caught him and went to trial. You saw
what he looked like and everything with the mask off? Mm-hmm.
Fuck. Yeah, I had to testify and all that. It was brutal. It was stupid. You know, we were all kids. I'm sure.
But so wait, you're now in the car. Mm-hmm. You feel the burn. Mm-hmm. You look down. You see you're bleeding.
Well, at that point, I was outside the car.
Okay,
I slid out of the car, and he ran. Yeah, I think I took a couple kicks or something, and then he ran, and then I got up and I was patting myself because I knew
you're still not really feeling that pain.
Not really feeling the pain yet, and like not sure where it was.
Right,
because the adrenaline just takes over. You feel nothing. And then as, I guess, the adrenaline, that chemical kind of dies down, you feel it a little bit more. It was hot. And then, but I didn't locate it from the feeling. I located it from feeling blood trickle down my leg.
Oh.
And then I had plastic pants on, and I just kind of looked.
Plastic pants?
Yeah, like,
fucker, plastic pants.
You know, like running jeans.
Oh, I see.
Okay. I don't know why I called plastic pants. I'm not fucking, am I Missy Elliott?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, so I have my garbage bags on, you know? yeah, shit. Running pants. Yeah, man.
And you feel it running down your leg? Yeah. And are you panicking now? Are you worried that it's hit that artery?
No, still,
or you?
Come. I don't know any of that. Ignorance is bliss.
Does your friend come back? What happens?
People are running up to the corner at that point. The cops have been called, or they were close.
Fuck.
They heard the shot, because that club was a problem. It was like a thug night. They were always in the area. The community board wanted to shut that party down. That's how it works in the city when, you know. And, next thing you know, I'm in an ambulance. They cut the pants off me. I remember them cutting the pants off me, and I remember being like, I didn't want anyone to see my limp penis.
Not my plastic pants, man.
My plastic pants. I got these for a Missy Elliott video.
Plastic pants.
And I just wanted to stay covered. I was like, I hope nobody sees my penis. Because they put the, you know, they put the thing on you. And they do that all outside, like emergency
stuff. In front of everybody, yeah.
Yeah, so, and that's what happened.
So what happened when you get to the hospital?
I got to the hospital. They, they go in to see if it did any damage. They put their hand in my asshole, and they're seeing if it
for real.
That ripped to see.
So wait, when it hit your leg, it went up towards your butt cheek.
Yeah, like, it went in here, and it kind of lodged itself in my right
cheek.
How
big's your scar right now?
The scar, you can hardly. The scar just looks kind of like a tiny hole,
uh-huh.
And it's like flat there. No hair grows there.
Right,
and it's it. It's like a tiny thing.
And it went in and up.
It went in and, yeah, I was.
Into your right butt cheek?
Right, my right butt cheek. And, like,
and they put their fingers up your ass?
Yeah, to see if there was any rip or damage or anything. Like, she gave me a, you know. Yeah,
that's
not
how it ends.
That's not comfortable, yeah.
Who knew getting shot ends with a finger up your ass?
Yeah. And that's before, like, regular prostate exams. So you're not ready for it at 23. No.
No. And after a traumatic evening, that's how this is going to wrap up.
And she was a hot doctor, too. I was going, like, Jesus Christ. It was embarrassing.
Oh, man.
It was really humiliating.
So did they get the bullet out, or you still have it in you?
They left it in. No, so what happened is it was so deep in there, they decided to leave it in.
What kind of bullet? What is it?
A
9?
38. And the reason they left it in is because it was deep, and your body will reject the foreign object. So little by little, it will push it to the surface. And so they just wanted to wait for the body to naturally push it. Yeah. And then, like, a couple of years later, I went to the surgeon and got it removed. And that's where the funny story happens.
For real? So your body will push until it gets to the surface. Then you go to get it just cut open and pulled out?
Your body will reject the foreign object and, like, slowly try to push it out.
It doesn't dissolve it. It's going to
just
push
could,
it out.
If it could, I don't know. I guess they could. But
so what happens? 2 years later it takes?
Yeah, so it took about
And are you feeling it?
You
like
feel
you,
it.
You do?
I could touch it. I could actually touch it through the skin.
Wait, while it was in there the whole time?
I could feel it.
Would you find yourself playing with it?
I played with it a little bit.
I would too.
It just kind of, it just added something that was unique.
Yeah, leave it in.
I was like, that's an interesting pinch.
I'm shooting nuts across the room, man. Leave it in, goddamn.
Yeah, I couldn't come without it after I lost it.
I gotta have a finger up my ass to come now.
Yeah, it really made things weird. I was like, I need a finger in my ass, I need a bullet in my leg, and I need a guy to jerk it off.
Kick me 3 times while I'm on the ground, goddamn.
Yeah, it made it weird.
Oh, man, so you gotta go get it cut out. What happened?
So, yeah, so I started, I stopped doing comedy because I started having these massive panic attacks and anxiety.
What was happening? Like, would you be nervous
PTSD.
At night? And
No, it didn't make sense. It's just PTSD, that's what it is. Like, and I realized, like, it's like you have a traumatic event happen. We all walk through life with this kind of benign denial where we just never think anything bad is going to happen. And it's benign denial because we need it. You need that. You can't be thinking of all the things that could happen or else you lose your mind and you're never happy or comfortable.
Yes.
But then when it does happen, you go to sort of the equal but opposite extreme where you're going like, oh, shit, this could happen any moment because it happened. And you're not even conscious of it. You're just freaking out going, is it going to happen again? And so I had to go to therapy, and I quit doing comedy because I'd get on stage, and I would just have these massive panic attacks, I had no idea what was going on.
And what would happen with your panic attack?
It would just be like my heart would start racing. I'd start sweating, and I'd feel like
Did you black out at all?
Close. I'd feel like I was going to faint, and I'd like have to get off the train and just be like shaking a bit. And it was a mask. Then I was going, what is happening to me? You know? And then when I went to therapy, you know, it was explained to me, and I slowly figured it out. But I quit comedy for a couple of years from 2002 to 2005, really. And
because of that?
Because of that, yeah.
But did that help?
Because I got shot in 2001, May of 2001. It didn't help, but I started doing social work for those years.
You did?
Yeah. I was working with 9/11 victims mm-hmm. for Lutheran Social Services. And that's when I went back, and they told me that the, you know, because the bullet was hurting. It would like it would, when it rained, it would hurt.
When it rained?
Yeah,
really?
Because it's metal, I guess. So it would, like, it would hurt a little bit.
It's weird.
And temperature, pressure, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then it would also rip the muscle a little bit. Like when I play basketball, I would feel it, and it hurt. But it got closer to the surface, so I went in, and they said, yeah, we're ready to take it out. So I had to go get the x-rays. And at the time, I was doing social work, doing 9/11 disaster relief. So about 2002, maybe. Yeah. And I got the x-ray, and everyone I was working with was like older Christian women and stuff, you know, black women or whatever. So I came back with the x-ray, and they all wanted to see it. They're like, let me see it, you know, because they wanted to see the bullet. They wanted to see the x-ray of the bullet. And I hadn't looked at it. It was a big, you know, one of those big x-rays. So I pulled it out and put it on the window, and it was like you could see my entire limp penis. I got shot right here. Yeah. So all these Christian women gathered around looking at the bullet, and that my just dead limp dick. Just because the whole like thing shows up in the x-ray.
Yeah.
So that was a funny moment. They were like, oh. Thank God it was at least bigger than the bullet, though, you know? Then, this is true. This is, I'm not, no hyperbole. Then when we had it removed, they put me under, like little laugh gas or whatever, mm-hmm. and they put me in stirrups like I was at the gynecologist.
No,
yeah, they had to get it out. And I woke up to him and the nurse, the surgeon and the nurse down there, like by my ass. And I woke up, I farted when I woke up. I farted right in the doctor's face. And I woke up to them just kind of laughing because I fucking farted. And that's the first, when I was conscious, that was the first thing I heard was the noise of my fart. True stories.
God damn, that is a hell of an ordeal,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Farted right in that doctor's face.
Oh my God.
And God then damn. Started doing comedy again. Donnell Rawlings was actually the guy who started, like, he had a room.
Oh, shit.
And I would start going doing his comedy once a week in his room. And they took me on the road on the Chappelle Show tour. And I would just, like, sell his posters and open for them, do 5 minutes. And that's how I got back into it.
Oh, God damn. We're going to take a quick break and tell you about our sponsor, Burrow. It's called the dead of winter for a reason. And now that all the holiday prep and festivities have died down, there's a bit of a chill period where we're all just staying home, hanging out. And I'm going to tell you, with a new Burrow sofa in your space, coming home after work won't feel like a last resort. It'll be your prime destination. Durable fabric that's naturally scratch and stain resistant. That's great if you have kids or pets. And here's my favorite part, built-in USB chargers. What? Charge it up on the couch, y'all. Pick your favorite color, your leg finish, your armrest style, and the length. You can add a chaise lounge or an ottoman or both. You can set this thing up yourself in minutes. All right, you can add or remove seats as needed. You can even convert a love seat or a sofa into a corner sectional in the future. Burrow's Genius Sleep Kit also transforms your comfy sofa into an even comfier bed. They also offer a collection of affordable rugs, coffee tables, love seats, armchairs, and ottomans. So here's the deal. First of all, I know a lot of you have that man cave. A lot of you got that playroom. A lot of you got the company coming over, in-laws living with you, whatever. Get them this couch. Pull it out. It's their bed, too. They don't even need to go anywhere. Just put them down in the basement with the old couch. You get the new one. You know what's up? Get $75 off your purchase and free 1 week shipping at burrow.com/honeydew. That's burrow.com/honeydew for $75 off at Burrow. Now let's get back to the do. So since we're back into comedy now, I want to talk about the year you had in 2019. But you said recently, or
I wish I knew you in 2019, we could talk and be like, I know what you're going through. You'd be like, I know. It sounds like you had a bad one too.
2019 was 2016 was my 2019 for you. But 2019 had a couple losses for sure.
Yeah.
But you said, you talk about panic attacks, and I guess recently on stage you said something happened to you. What happened?
So I beat them. Like, I totally beat them. And I went like a couple years, no problems. And then I remember I did a one-nighter in Connecticut, and it went great. It was a real high. So that might have had something to do with it. And then I drove to the Comedy Connection in Providence, Rhode Island, for a weekend, Friday, Saturday. And I remember I didn't eat. It's kind of stupid. I drove. I didn't drink a lot. So that might have contributed to it a little bit, but it was mostly just panic attack again. So I get on stage.
Is this the first? How are you there for
show.
A weekend?
Yeah, we're there for the weekend. First show. You know, we started this podcast, History Hyenas. Yeah. Fans are starting to come out. So the place is kind of full with fans. So it's even more embarrassing, right? They're all there. You know, I hear the pop when I'm walking up. They're excited because they've listened to the podcast. As soon as I get on stage, I'm talking, I said hello. I was like, what's up, everybody? I felt it, you know, that like black curtain come down, and you're like, fuck. And it's happened to me before, and I just sat down. It only happened like once or twice, and I sat down, and I was able to do the set just sitting down, right? So that was my first instinct. I was like, oh, I'll just sit down. And I'll do this sitting down, and then, you know, I'll get a chicken finger or whatever. Maybe my blood sugar's low. I don't know what's going on. You're not.
I like that you're just getting one chicken finger.
Yeah, it's like one chicken finger will solve it.
So all you said is hello, and
all
they're still clapping and settling.
All I said is hello, and then we're in the danger zone. It's like, fuck, I'm going to faint. I'm going down. So I pull the stool up as I'm saying hello, and I'm still just trying to play it off, and I'm smiling, going, how's everybody doing? But in my mind, I'm going like, I'm going to faint. I'm going to fall. And I sit down, and I just sit down, and I go like, and I feel it, and I go, can we get the host back up here? And I just had like an hour conversation with the kid, and I just couldn't even remember his name. I'm calling him the host. I'm going, can we get the hope up here? Because I'm just like, and he's kind of unsure if it's a bit. He's
right,
like,
yeah, going
like, and then I had to be like more serious. I'm like, no, I think I'm going to faint. And the whole crowd's like, some of them are laughing, some of them are not. And then he comes up, I get off, and that's what I say. I say, I need a chicken finger. I was like, someone give me a chicken finger. So he, him or the feature, went to someone's table who had just ordered chicken fingers and just grabbed the basket and took it. Because I was saying, like, this is emergency. And they're going, are you diabetic? And I'm going, no, no. I'm
get not. Him a chicken yeah. finger. He's like, a diabetic.
Yeah.
Hurry up with those chicken fingers, goddamn it.
I imagine this is the same type of emergency that has probably happened at a black show somewhere in the country at some point. Somebody had a low blood sugar and they're like, get him a chicken finger.
Took it off somebody's table.
He ran, took their chicken fingers, brought them into the green room, and I'm eating the chicken finger. It's not working.
And they're just out there killing time right now?
Yeah, they went back up. Yeah. So what happens, the host and feature kept switching off, and the owner was in there, Dave was in there. He's like, you all right? I was like, yeah, man, just let me get a little, maybe I'm dehydrated. I'm trying to figure it out. And it just didn't work, and it kept getting worse. And he was like, you want me to call an ambulance? And at this point, I'm going like, am I diabetic? Is this the night I'm going to find out about it? What's going on? And then the stretcher came. Which is like, there's nothing more humiliating.
They did call an ambulance?
They did call an ambulance, and they brought the stretcher through the crowd. Through the crowd like I was a fucking football player, on like injured, yeah. It was like, and there's nothing more embarrassing than getting.
Wait, they brought it in?
They brought
it on it, and it took you out through
it?
Yeah,
they were doing like, I heard the wheels as they were moving through the crowd. Excuse me, pardon me, I'm in the green room.
God, that's terrible.
And you know what the funny thing is?
They sit you up or like strap your head down and shit.
They had me all laid up. Some Greek guy handed me an icon on the way out. They were clapping as I was leaving. They were all clapping that I was okay. It's brutal, dude.
That's terrible.
Brutal. I was
That's
about,
your first night. Yeah,
first
I would be too.
I was
that
like,
is humiliating.
Yeah, it was humiliating. But there is nothing funnier than getting carried out in a stretcher when there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah, nothing.
And on top of that, I'm in Providence, and you know the EMTs are kind of like fucking, you know, they fucking New England kids, so they were breaking my balls a little bit. They going, so what's wrong? Did you have a bad set or what? You know, you nervous?
Yeah, you're nervous.
Because they took my blood pressure and they looked at my heart and they're like, you know, is this your first time doing comedy? Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. So did you rally and do the rest of the weekend?
So I don't, again, it's one of those things when anxiety comes down on you, I don't know what's happening.
Sure.
So, but they tell me I'm okay. I went to the hospital. The doctor's like, gave me a speech, like, what's going on in your life? And I start telling her, she's like, oh man, you got a lot going on.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, you're forgetting to take care of yourself. She's like, this happens a lot where you're the caretaker for a lot of people. At this point, my dad was elderly and close to dying.
Well, he was already in elementary school.
Yeah, he was. Exactly. You know, so many things were happening at that time. And
your mom's progressively getting worse.
And my best friend was losing his mind, sleeping on the street. It was just a time where it was like an avalanche. It was Murphy's Law. In my personal life, a lot of people I cared about were crumbling.
So what's...
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Go ahead.
And so I think like the walls just kind of came down and my subconscious just couldn't hold those fucking walls. And the flood just, you know, it could only hold for certain long and it just flooded in. And I couldn't. We have a weird profession, I learned. It's like really weird. It's like if you're going through a lot of personal shit, you know, and you work at a cubicle or something, you can muscle through that. You can kind of sit at your cubicle and just, because you don't have to fucking make people laugh. It's like you could just watch somebody get murdered on the street, but you still got to go to work and show up 10 minutes later and be like, all right, how's everybody doing tonight? You guys ready for me to cheer you up? You know, it's a fucking strange thing. It's like no matter what we're doing, we have to be happy for other people. And I realize that's why so many of us turn to like substance abuse and addictions is because it's hard to kind of keep that up, you know, when you're going through stuff. But you got to keep getting that money. And like especially the place I'm in, I'm like, I got to do these gigs. You know, I'm not, you know, I'm like, I'm still check in a lot of ways, you know? So it's like, that's, you know, that's why you just drown out, you numb it out and you get up there and that's the real dangers. And I hope we have to start figuring out a way to like take care of ourselves a little bit more.
Yeah, we really do.
Yeah. So I got fucking carted out. And then, so the owners call me and they're like, how you feeling? I'm like, I'm good, man. I'll be good tonight. I don't know what happened last night. I'll be fine. You know, I got something to eat or I don't know. Maybe I was dehydrated. And they were like, why don't we... You know, we'll cancel this weekend, and let's just cancel. So they canceled the whole weekend, and I understood. They didn't want to take the risk. They were like, you seem like you're going through something. Like, let's not force it. So I just sat
down. Don't die on our stage.
Yeah, we don't want any, like, you know, like, we don't want to, you know, yeah. We don't mind if you don't do well, but we don't want you literally dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the weekend was canceled.
Damn.
Yeah, and then, like, then you start associating like the anxiety with stage. So then the panic attacks start happening again. I did the weekend in San Diego where I was just sitting down thinking I was going to faint the whole time, but somehow muscled through it. And now I've kind of been slowly climbing out of it again where I'm starting to just be able to go on stage and just beat the anxiety or whatever happens in your brain that makes you a pussy. We're pussy. I'm a pussy.
I mean, yeah. I mean, we're so weak.
Sensitive pussies.
We're just weak. We are. We're human beings. We're weak.
Yeah.
We're weaker than almost any animal.
Yeah.
Hand-to-hand combat.
Oh, we're going to lose all those fights.
Hand-to-hand combat. Yeah. We're losing against any animal pretty much our size.
Yeah.
Yep.
We weren't even the apex predator.
Mother Nature. No.
For a long time.
As soon as we got guns and arrows and shit, we turned the tide on everybody. But other than that, if it was just hand to hand, it's over.
Oh, dude,
we're nothing.
We used to get eaten by saber-toothed tigers and hyenas.
We're nothing.
Oh, we're fucking, we stink.
A lion swipe would fucking throw us 30 fucking yards.
And
it'd be nothing.
The difference between a saber-toothed tiger and a human is like in toughness is like the difference between a regular human and a comic. I mean, we are the biggest pussies. There's like three or four of us that can throw hands. The rest of us are like, hey, man, let me just charm my way out of this situation.
Let me just get behind Joe. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just going to get behind Joe.
Get behind Joe, yeah.
So tell us about 2019. Obviously, the panic attacks and everything, but what's going on?
Yeah, so my mom, my mom had just, she's in like a memory care facility. She started to like decompensate even further, where she needed to go to like a nursing home. She went to the hospital that weekend.
Looking, is that in New York?
In New York.
Okay.
Looking back, it makes sense. It was like that weekend she went to the hospital. She had a pacemaker.
Old, I'm sorry, how old is she?
She's 86 now, 87.
Okay.
Yeah. So she was being moved to a hospital. My dad was hospitalized because he had like fluid in his lungs, and like his heart would sometimes slow down because congestive heart failure, and they would like kind of bring him back. So he was coming back from the hospital, which was like a regular thing towards the end of his life because he had stage 4 cancer, testicular cancer all over his body. But it moved slow in the elderly. So it was just kind of like, and I'm just always thinking about them, my mother's teeth. I had to take her to get new teeth because they were kind of rotting out.
So can I ask you, your oldest brother, he's I know you don't get along, but he's not helping your parents? He's not involved?
He helps in the way that he helps. You know, he lives in a different place. So I think that a lot of it falls on me because I live there. So a lot of the grunt work comes on me. He does sort of a lot of the logistic stuff. So that's helpful too. But.
And does your brother live in his own place, or is he?
He lives in a like a offshoot program. It's the most amazing thing in Jersey, and it's like you know, they supervise him, they come check in on him.
And how often are you seeing him?
I see him like on holidays, and
so you've got your brother to worry about. You got your mom, who's actively the one you need to worry about. So right. Now she's in a facility.
She was on her way to like a nursing home, and she had been hospitalized that weekend.
What did they?
She has a pacemaker in. They needed to check, and then she had like pneumonia, or she fell. I think I remember she fell, and they wanted to see if it was heart related because she fell, and so they were doing all these tests and whatever, and that's when they were discovering that she had decompensated to the point where she needed to go to a nursing home. Like, she couldn't eat. Now she has to be fed, like hand-fed. Yeah, it's just an ugly, slow... Modern medicine's a beautiful thing, but then it gets to a point where you're going like, this is brutal to watch. But you then the other side, you're like, I can't, you know, you can't kill my mom. But you're kind of... It's a horrible thing to say, but you're kind of hoping for it just to sort of put... There's no quality of life.
I talk about that. HBO did that movie, You Don't Know Jack, with Pacino as Kevorkian. You ever seen it?
No.
It was so well done. And what they did that I really liked was they intercut actual home video footage that would be sent to Kevorkian, or stuff that he was filming while studying this thing. And I remember this one lady... the husband was showing, and she was in like her own backyard, and then you could see her snap out of it. She came back, and she's like, how long was that? And he was like, about 30 minutes. And she goes, if that happens 3 days in a row, I want to go.
I respect that. Yeah.
And at the point where she's like, I'm for over an hour, I don't know who my kids are, I don't know where I am. And then he would come and you paid his airfare, I think. And hell, I remember in one of them, he's sleeping in somebody's Volkswagen. I think he just had to fly him out there, and he would come and do it. But he was like, make sure you say all your goodbyes, because it was quick. And you would see him take this deep breath, and then they would just go.
Right.
And I remember they got him. They were trying to get him on something. They got him on some like they did with Capone. They got him on a technicality. And when he went in prison, all these inmates were clapping and cheering for him, you know, because and then you think about how many of those people want to fucking go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's a touchy issue, but I have to side with what he was trying to do.
I believe Holland has it legal.
They
I believe
do.
It's Holland, right?
A couple places, yeah. I believe, in like everything Scandinavia is ahead in a few
You know,
things.
I know it's sticky, but if you're still of sound mind and you can sign a document that says, if I ever get to a point where this, and this happens, then yeah.
Yeah.
I think you should be allowed to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even, request.
Yeah, request. Like, I want to go.
We have a thing where it's like no more treatment.
Right.
But then you have to maintain the person.
Right, and that's the other thing. You could bleed the people who are living dry. Yeah. I mean, the amount of money it would cost you. Like, if I'm ever at that point, I will tell my daughter, let me go. Don't go into debt to keep me alive. I'm not even here anymore. I'm gone. I'm just a carcass.
Yeah, and it's not even that comfortable for the person. Like, that's what happened to my dad. They decided to stop treatment. But then he's still struggling to breathe, and you got to watch him slowly die and watch the body slowly shut down. The other alternative is just like, you know, do it so he doesn't have to go through that. Right. So it's like, it's a touchy thing, but I'm for it. Euthanasia is like, it's a virtuous thing in those instances, you know, and Yeah, those people probably would rather go.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. There's no way to live their hell. We have no idea.
Yeah. And so my dad passed. I got to be, you know, I was very close to my dad, and I got to be with him.
You did?
I was there, which is just like, I'm just glad that happened. Like, I'm glad that I was in the room when he passed. I was able to be
just
there.
Just you and him?
It was just me and him. And I was listening to him breathe, and I fell asleep. I heard the last breath because I was kind of in and out of consciousness.
What time of day?
It was in the morning, 6:43 or something in the morning, November 5th. So that was recent.
Yeah, it's very recent.
Yeah, so that was rough. And then...
Do you remember his last words? Did he have any?
Yeah, his last words, my dad was real funny. And my dad, he kept his personality towards the end. But the last thing he said to me, at this point, he wasn't talking. He had the mask on. He was just breathing and his body was just kind of shutting down. Mm. But the last thing he said to me when he had that like last burst that, you know, people were about to die yet, I happened to be there at a certain point. And because we were all like taking turns being there. So I probably missed a lot of other times where he was more talkative. But I said, I remember he kind of woke up in the hospital and I was there. And I said, hey, Dad, it's me. It's Yanni. It's your son. He goes, no shit. So the so that was the last thing. I'm glad. Yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, you go through those horrible things and you hope for these great last moments. And I got two of them. One, that being his last words, which puts a smile on my face. And then the other one being that I was lucky enough to be with him when he died, just so he knew he wasn't alone.
And also, your dad was lucky enough. I mean, you think about that when we go. I hope somebody I love is there. And, you know, I'm not dying on some fucking sidewalk or in some Walmart in aisle 7 or some bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, your dad got to live a long life, got to smoke all those motherfucking cigarettes.
Tons of them.
Yeah. And then go out with his son right there with him. I think that's a pretty good fucking life right there.
Yeah.
That's good of you.
Yeah, he lived, man. And then one of my closest friends who, you know, I took on the road for 8 years with me, we became real good friends. He had stomach cancer diagnosed like a year ago. And then so for the last year, he was like, everyone knew, I knew he was dying. He didn't tell anyone. He didn't want me to tell anyone. There was a few of us who knew. But then he passed like right before Christmas. So that was tough too. It was like.
And when that just came on?
He was.
Isn't it crazy? Then you hear about your dad smoking these cigarettes.
Yeah. I mean, he used to drink a lot. You know, I don't know if that causes it, but they say it does because it rips up the lining in your stomach or whatever and leaves you vulnerable for stuff like that. You know, not definite. Nobody knows, but you know. Comics don't have healthy lifestyles for the most part.
Eating chicken fingers to save yourself.
I'm dying. Does anyone have any fried food?
That's what we're asking for.
Good point. Yeah. We don't even know healthy options exist. We just look for whatever's on the side of a highway. You're like, give me that to fix me.
I need a chicken finger.
Yeah. Give me some beef jerky and a Mountain Dew. So, he passed away, you know, early 50s, just too young, man. So that was rough. That was real rough.
Early 50s. Yeah, it scares me.
Real rough and real sad. And it's been sad. So, but now those things are passing. Scar tissue's kind of forming. I'm starting to feel myself kind of climb out of it, and it feels good. And now I have those experiences, and you learn that, you know, you really learn how ephemeral this all is. And the silver lining, I think, is that the real currency here is like friendships, laughter. That's the rest of it doesn't mean nothing. Money, it means nothing.
No one gives
it's
a fuck all going about away. The car you drove when you're gone.
Yeah.
Nobody gives a fuck.
Death is the ultimate equalizer.
No one cares about the fucking patio furniture you have when you're no one cares.
Yeah.
You also lost your manager last year. I mean, you had a lot.
People listening going, what the fuck?
Yeah, 2019 was a year.
2019 was bad, man.
And I wish, Dave.
Yeah.
And I wish I knew. I know all those New York guys but him. And he was the one guy I'd never met. And everyone was always like, Ryan, the nicest guy. So, I mean, that was awful. I lost my manager. Well, she was my first manager. First real manager. Let me make that real clear. First real good manager. Somebody actually cared about me. Judy Apperson. I loved her. And, yeah, she passed away. They did a nice memorial for her at the Hollywood Improv, so I got to go to that and speak.
How did she really go? Nice. Was it like a tragic
thing? It was weird. She wasn't feeling well, from what I understand. Went to the hospital. They said, you're okay. Went home. Continued not to feel well. Went back. They said, well, we want to run some tests. And, you know, she was a hustler. She's like, well, how long is this going to take? I got this, this, this. And they're like, you're going to need to stay overnight. And I believe overnight she passed.
Wow.
And that's, I'm still tragic. Not sure what exactly happened. My Uncle Ed died last year, who lived in Highland Town. He was the last one in Greektown. He outlasted Greektown, which is unbelievable to me. But he died of cancer. But he had it for a while, and he was a fucking fighter. But then I'd start to see the pictures on Facebook and stuff, and I'm like, oh man.
How old is he?
He had a good run, but I think he might have got into his 80s.
Decent run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was like, there's only one relative left that's the key to all the questions I have from any of the other relatives from that era. You know what I mean? Like, hey, what was blah, blah, blah. And they're going.
Yeah, you got to get left. You got to get them all, get all those stories, get everything.
We're the next generation of those questions for all the other people.
Yeah, yeah. We're not even going to have close to as good as the stories as they have.
No.
They're going to be like, whoa, tell me a good story. You're going to be like, I was on my phone all day. I watched a great video. Yeah. I was podcasting, and you're like, again? He's like, I mean, most of the time we just spent podcasting.
So where are you at with anxiety now, and has it come back since, or just that last gig?
I have moments. There's moments where it's not gone. Like, I had a nice chunk of years where I just, even though I was still going through hard stuff with the family, Alzheimer's, all those things, they didn't go away, and they kind of were progressively getting worse. I had somehow just kind of managed to keep it together somewhat, continue doing comedy, because that stuff really affects you. But recently now, there's a few after effects I'll get here and there, but things are starting to feel real good. I'm starting to feel real good again.
What are you doing? Are you in therapy? Do you meditate? Do you breathe? Nothing. Do you take medicine? What do you do?
Just suck it up and just I should. I should, like, start meditating or something, but I try to work out, try to run. That feels good.
That's great for you.
And just hang out, laugh with friends, and have that new perspective is great. Though it's like when people you love die, you have this moment where it really hits you how short this is. Mm-hmm. For some, you're going, and how unimportant, not only short but like unimportant, you're going like, oh man, you realize like, oh, he didn't exist for forever, and now he doesn't exist forever. And like, there was this little slither.
Blip.
It's like a blip.
Yeah.
It's like a meaningless blip that it's a cosmic joke, man. So comedians have kind of hacked it a little bit. We've hacked life a little bit, and we should appreciate that and just take care of our health first. I think a comedian's job first should be health, because this is such an unhealthy, unstable life.
Yeah.
Not only just what we eat, but it's like emotionally, you're always getting rejected. You know, you got to have the pressure to make someone laugh every 8-9 seconds when you're on stage live. And, you know, it's more stressful than we think because it's so fun. So I think, like, hopefully it becomes like health one, career two.
There is no career without health.
Yeah, it's just gotta be health one. Like, meaning, like, that's your job. You wake up and you're like, you know what? I'm gonna freaking go to the gym and, like, get on a bike and make sure I'm here to tell jokes.
Yeah, I had had a panic attack. I was with Tom in Atlantic City, and I had like a little panic. I guess it was a small one, because I've seen videos of people who have panic attacks, and I did not have this. But
you didn't end up in a stretcher getting wheeled out of a
stretcher, bro. Wheeling through a comedy club crowd.
Give Tom the thumbs up.
I'm grabbing chicken fingers on the way by. But it was so high. I actually had the conversation with myself, like, okay, don't jump. Sit down, sit down. I had to sit down. I've never been like that on a fucking escalator. And then I started getting scared.
What do you mean? Wait, no, don't jump?
Yeah. It was at the Ocean Casino, and the fucking escalator goes, like, there's like four of them. And we were way the fuck up there. And I looked over the side, and I was like, oh, and I started to have this panic attack about how high I am. And I even said out loud, oh my God, if I fell over this, I could die. And the guy behind me is like, why the fuck are you thinking that? I'm like, I don't know, dude. And I turned around, I sat on the step, and I was like, okay, don't do anything stupid. Don't jump. Just sit here till somebody tells us we're at the top. Never in my life. I started getting afraid to fly. And then Dr. Drew recommended this EMDR. And what it did was allow me, because my daughter almost got hit by a car last December, not this 2018.
Right.
And it unhinged me. It brought about all this anxiety and fear of death. And the same thing that you had, that have been lying dormant for all this time. And, you know, you do expect to bury your parents, but I didn't expect to bury my father when I was 16. And I've had this same thing, this, I lost that when I shouldn't have. I can't lose this.
Right.
And it just made me freak the fuck out and started thinking about, I loved fucking, you know, hauling ass down a runway and taking off. You know, that used to be my favorite feeling. And then all of a sudden I started to think like, oh man, let's get up in the air for 10 minutes. We're not going to crash. Turbulence, all of it.
You get in your own head.
All the of fear my own just head. Gets, future tripping.
Yeah, future tripping.
None
man.
Of it's happening. Yeah. None of it's happening. None of it. And I told the therapist, like, after my daughter almost got hit, I told her mom to immediately, like, for the next couple of weeks, I couldn't stop thinking about what didn't happen.
Right.
It didn't happen, but I saw it in my mind, and it fucked with me hard. So I went to look at that, and then, you know, thank God, I figured out where it was coming from, and it's all fear-based and bullshit and everything else, you know. I went this past year for a few months to work on that.
Yeah.
And that really changed my outlook on, I mean, so much shit. I said the same thing. Back in July, I called a truce with my daughter's mother. I'm like, she's already fucking going to be 5 years old. Like, this shit's going by like this. It's so insignificant when it's all said and done. Can we please just figure out a way to get along for everybody? And she was down. So we work on that.
That's beautiful.
We work on it.
Yeah.
But I was like, if that would have happened, what does it matter whose night it is or where we're going with vacation? You know, who gives a fuck if that happens?
Right.
So.
Right.
We're trying to work on all that stuff now, and I keep trying to work on that stuff, and I don't want to argue. I think that kind of shit causes cancer.
I think
dwelling and that fucking letting shit eat at you and, you know, just fester, I think that fucking causes cancer.
I agree with you. I think that stress and those knots you get in certain, because you take the stress on in certain parts of your body, and that could be where you end up just leaves you vulnerable for it.
Yeah.
It's amazing that, you know, because we have like these big brains, like the human species is the only species that has to figure out a way to deal with how big our brain is. You know, cats are just walking around like bird, kill it, you know, sleep, eat. We're like, you know, I could be on this plane could go, you know,
yeah,
it's like,
right, yeah. Like, shut the fuck up.
You got to figure out a way to shut your brain up.
Yes, shut it all.
Because you create this, like, reality that's not happening. And like I said at the beginning, even when the bad thing is happening, it's never as bad as worrying about it. It's just happening.
Yes.
So you're actually oddly zen. You're in the moment because you're forced to be in the moment.
It's
after
that.
Kind of ironic that the horror forces you to like live in the moment.
Yeah, it does. And then it's all the bullshit after that you start thinking about that wrecks you. Yeah.
Right. It's wild. The brain is a wild thing.
Well, man, I am glad you're doing better.
Thanks, man.
Thank you for coming on here and sharing all this
shit. This was a wild ride.
This is fun. I mean, I'm sorry you got shot, but that's the best gunshot story I've ever heard.
I'm a roller coaster. I'm just taking my belt off. I'm like, wow, that was wild.
Will you please one more time promote everything you like?
Thanks, man. So my special, Blow in the Light, on YouTube. Please check that out. It's free. If you're in New York City, I'll be at Gotham Comedy Club February 21st and 22nd, and Uncle Vinny's February 27th and 28th, and most importantly, my podcast, History Hyenas, with me and Chris DiStefano, who will also be on an episode
of
this.
Yes, he will.
Yeah. So awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
This is
pleasure.
Awesome. Oh, wait. I do have to ask you advice to your 16-year-old self. Thank you very much.
You want me to do it in Hebrew? All right.
Can you do it in Hebrew? Do it in Greek, brother.
I got a lot of Jewish friends I grew up with. When you're from Brooklyn, like, you just have three or four Jews, you know. Advice to my 16-year-old self would be, take the pressure off of trying to, like, be perfect. Just don't do that. Just keep going forward. That was like a don't. And that might have happened to me. That's a big flaw of mine. I would get so discouraged if it wasn't perfect. And I think part of that might have been because my brother was brain injured. So I just felt like I was scared to not be perfect or something to compensate for him never being able to get better, which is a weird thing for a young kid to have to deal, like, understand.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was young, I would, like, try to... I'm bringing it back down again. I'm bringing us back to the middle of the episode.
You're doing right.
We're trying to go light. But I remember trying to force him to read, like, when I was young, because I didn't understand, and I was, like, trying to get him smarter. So, which, like, that doesn't work. If you know, so That's what I would tell my 16-year-old kid, is like, there's no such thing as perfection. Don't get discouraged. And just like, you know, life's about getting up. It's not about like getting it right, you know? That's it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, man.
I am Ryan Sickler on all social media, RyanSickler.com. We'll talk to you all next week.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there. Yeah.